We know there's power in our numbers. We've seen the impact we make when we stand together. So let's stand with candidates who represent us in Washington, D.C., not extremist Bernie Moreno. If elected, Moreno could make the Radical Project 2025 playbook a reality, endangering our democracy and our hard-won rights and freedoms. Together, we can stop Moreno and his allies from reversing everything our ancestors fought for: Social Security, voting rights, and more. Sherrod Brown always stands up for the well-being of our community, capping the price of life-saving drugs like insulin and cracking down on predatory landlords jacking up rents in Black neighborhoods. Black power is in our votes. Let's use it today. Vote now to re-elect Senator Sherrod Brown.
Paid for by Ask Me People, AskMePeople.org, which is responsible for the content of this ad. Not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.
Today on Lulz, we got our buddy Neil Orfield swinging by for a fireside chat. We'll talk about DFS, Sims, Battle Royales, YouTube strategy, all of that good stuff here on Lulz with Pete and Brick. And guest Neil, let's do it.
He thinks this is a go. Vegas Dave thinks this is a go.
Hot naked girls doing yoga.
What?
Why don't you just win like a man?
Random.org. Type in one for yes, two for no, and let the DFS cats pick for you.
And I'm absolutely begging you not to dupe us. Please don't dupe us.
All right, Neil Orfield. I think last time we had you on, you had either just begun your quest to stream all 150 best ball drafts or we're in the midst of it. How has this transition to in season been for you?
It's been fun. It's definitely more my wheelhouse. I think I'm talking about DFS than best ball. So I've enjoyed kind of the transition kind of back to my old stomping grounds, what I'm kind of more used to with DFS. It's been a good time.
You and Brian are ships passing in the sea because now you're doing all the showdown DraftKings stuff. And now Brian's doing all the BR stuff. You guys just kind of like crossed underdog and DraftKings paths there.
Yeah, that's true. I have not done any BR stuff, but I also don't have the tools that they have at Endgame Syndicate to really explore BR. All I can do is BS and talk about who I like, whereas they have actual cool tools to work on it.
I was inspired by Neil's oldest man drafting 150 and after 20 years started playing Madden football on Xbox again, to teach these youngsters a lesson.
Good for you. Do you still have the dexterity to beat that? I know Pete still has that dexterity.
Yeah, I just tweeted out. I just tweeted out. I'm ranked top 100.
Oh, no way.
Really?
Wow.
We'll see how high I get.
It might shock people.
Are you
going to
become a streamer, Brian?
Yeah, you should stream it.
Probably not, since I don't really know how to do that. I didn't even know Davis was berating me for not being able to take a clean screenshot. I used my phone. And I'm like, yeah. It goes with being old, the old man bit. So
people will be shocked to know Brian's actually older than I am by like a year or two. Not by a lot, but actually, if you wanted to stream 150, you could take my record from me.
Yeah, what's going on with this, that. Brian? Like the reflection here from your camera.
It's off kilter.
You know, when I saw this, I thought this, like, I was just scrolling through. I'll admit I didn't fully read the tweet. I thought this was something from like the DraftKings crowns page. Doesn't it look like an achievement really mission or thing that you'd see on DraftKings?
It does. Yeah, it kind of has no Madden context at all in it. It does look like that for sure.
Impressive, Brian, finding time for video games. DFS just so easy for you now. You don't need to refine your process. You can just kick back and play video games.
Yeah, or am I just that good, Pete? Am I just that sharp?
I'm curious, Brian, do you think that there is significantly more edge in BRs than DFS at this point?
No, because the BR EVs are pretty low, like based on Dan Sims. So like we're averaging, I'm going to guess, we probably should track this. On Davis's streams, his EV he gives us is probably like, I want to say like 25, 30 bucks an hour or something.
Okay.
Because it's hard to tell. So like each draft, like, so today he said three drafts. So $7 buy-in. One was EV was like $4.20. So like we lost money. Another one was $18 and change. And then another one was $11 and change. So how many can you do in an hour? Like quite a bit, right?
Yeah.
Pete, you would know better.
Pete multi-tables like four at a time. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. I've been doing five at a time. I want to say it's like five minutes to kind of rip through that.
So, okay. So let's say, so the first one we made $11, and then the second one, what did I say? 11. So we made $4, and then we lost, let's just say $3. So that's 12 divided by three, $4 a draft. So $4 a draft. And then what's realistic to get in an hour? You don't want to multi-table too much because you probably lose EV from concentrating.
Yeah.
So like what's realistic, Pete, for an hour of doing BRs? How many?
Let's just even like round it up to 10 minutes. Like so let's say 30. Let's say 30 in an hour.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, then you're looking at $120 an hour if you could do that. If you can maintain your EV.
Yeah.
I was guessing more like, you know, 30, 40 bucks. So yeah, $120 an hour, pretty good. That feels like poker numbers, honestly. I don't know. So now after that, I think if you are in the top 0.1% of DFS, you probably make more. Getting to that top 0.1% of DFS is harder than getting to the top 0.1% of Madden. I'll tell you that much. So yeah, it might, I've said this a whole bunch of times with the no ballers and stuff. It's like, yeah, it's possible to be Utica. It's possible to be a no baller. Are you that 0.01%? Maybe not. Probably not. Right. It's hard to be that guy.
Yeah.
So Neil, have you had your, it seems like you've been really focusing on showdown content, you know, both from your, I assume both your play and your content have been skewing there.
Yeah. So it's funny. Showdown is the only thing I'm doing on my own channel, but I'm doing a lot of main slate content as well. It's just my main slate content is I do a written like game by game breakdown for 4 for 4 for tournaments. And then I also do a cash game article, but that's all behind the paywall at 4 for 4. And then I'm doing for main slate, I'm doing the podcast with Davis and Pat on Fridays for 4 for 4. Then I do a podcast with Scott Barrett on Saturdays. Then I'm on the Roto Runners morning show. So I'm doing a lot of main slate content also. It's just on my own channel. The only thing I'm doing right now is showdown breakdowns, video content. And I save that intentionally for my own channel just to keep it active. It's something that I like. In the past, it's kind of like what I'm best known for, I think, in terms of content. Like at Stochastic, that was the show that I did all of the showdown stuff. So I was kind of known for it. But I'm doing, yeah, all types of content for both main slate and showdown. But I love doing showdown content. Like it is the one place I really feel like I can dig into the numbers, try to, you know, I'm kind of a galaxy brain player to begin with. And I think sometimes to my detriment on main slates, but I think it works out better on showdown when you can really dig into the numbers and kind of like try to guess what the trends are, where the field is, you know, really confident in one thing. And I can try to find where maybe there's a little bit of fragility in the field's confidence. I think that's kind of my strength and it works out better for showdown than main slates, I think in general.
You get a lot of viewers too.
Yeah, it's been it was a huge relief, pretty exciting for me after best ball, like all summer. Kind of feel like I'm grinding. I'm not really getting the viewers. It's going okay, but not that great. And then I start doing DFS content and it was like immediately getting, you know, triple the number of, I mean, more than triple live viewers. It's been pretty exciting for me to see that people do show up for the showdown content. And I think I'm better at it. So I think it's kind of a matter of, I think there are a lot of people who are much better than I am at BBM content, doing best ball content. But showdown has always been kind of my specialty and it kind of feels like I'm putting the work in and being rewarded for it. So yeah, it's been really fun.
There, I remember when I first did my deal with like Run the Sims back when they launched, I was doing the showdown crams like at the same time you were, and I was shocked. That was when I was getting the most views, at least for my channel at the time, just because there's such an appetite for people
really
right before lock. And I think that's a really good like takeaway too of, you know, if you can be immediate, you know, some of the like season long videos that crush, it's like Amari Cooper's traded to the Bills and whoever goes live right then that has a big following or whatever, they're going to get monster views because people want to talk about it and they're not hanging out on Twitter all day like us. They want to go to a YouTube channel. So I think that's been sharp of you to do that, and I'm stoked that you've been able to get some momentum going there.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. I think you're right. I think DFS content in general, like it's easier to get views on DFS content. Like if you're doing NBA DFS, there's always that immediacy. People really want that. And there just aren't that many people doing live before the contest types of shows. So the competition is a little bit lesser there. So I think, yeah, if you do good content right before lock, I think it in some ways might be harder to sell right before lock. Like if you're trying to sell products, because people really just want information. So from an actual like business standpoint, a little bit tougher, but as far as just like growing a channel, yeah, it helps quite a bit.
I noticed that too, as far as like, it's definitely more of a dine and dash crew, as far as, coming to consume that content. What were you going to say, Brian?
Getting people to like just watch is like that first step. Like, oh, okay, somebody cares. It's right. You know, because it's so weird to just start a YouTube channel and be like, am I just gonna sit here and talk to myself? People do it, by the way. If you just peruse enough YouTube like I do, you'll see bros where you're the second viewer and they're just talking, you know, they're still doing their show, just, you know, go like and subscribe. And it's like, bro, there's only one other person watching this.
I've seen plenty. I thought there was a very real, I thought it was more likely than not that that was going to be me for Showdown content. Like I was like, I know people liked my Showdown content back when I was with Stochastic, but a lot of those people are really loyal to Stochastic. So like the people who had watched me previously doing Showdown content, kind of like, well, now I'm, so it is the content that I'm better known for, but also I'm sort of directly competing with other people doing Showdown content, and those people already love Stochastic, that the company I used to work for. So I was honestly not sure that I would have more than 20, 30 viewers for my Showdown stuff. And I honestly thought about not doing it. I was like, do I need to keep my channel active? I have all these partnerships. Maybe I should just do that. But at the end I was like, but I really do love Showdown content. I do want to continue to try to grow my own thing. So I'm really glad that I did it, because it's the most exciting thing for me right now is I check constantly, like, are my subscriber numbers growing on YouTube? That kind of stuff is like, it's fun. It's one of those, like, we're all sort of nerdy, you know, watching metrics all the time, DFS, watching our bankrolls grow or decline or whatever. But then it's just another metric where it's kind of fun to just like be obsessive about, like, oh, nice, I got another subscriber, whatever, that kind of thing. So I'm really, really glad I decided to do it.
Remind me, which like games, Thursday Night Football, Sunday Night Football, Monday Night, what are you firing up streams for all of them?
Yep, I'm doing Sunday, Monday, Thursday every week. And I'm doing, me and Adam Ship My Money have been doing a morning show on Mondays and Thursdays as well. Sometimes we stream to Endgame Syndicate as well. And then, yeah, just before lock for all of those. And then, yeah, it's tough with these London games. I've been finding the time. I put out a short video for both of them. I did one live stream. So I've been trying to do those as well when they pop up.
Do you have the YouTube membership set up on your channel?
YouTube membership as in like to be paid?
Yeah, exactly. Like the what just became a member here.
I don't have that. Cause I guess I don't totally understand it for somebody like me who's not selling anything.
You could make every third Showdown for members only or something.
It's exactly where I was going with it. You pick one of the shows a week, the Thursday, the Sunday or Monday, and that's a paywall. And those didn't exist back when I was doing all those like live stream cram stuff. But yeah, it would just be another way for, you know, people to, you know, I think appreciate like all the stuff you're doing, and because you aren't selling something specific, be like, yeah, one of these is going to be the paywall. And some people will just be like, yeah, that's fine, I'll just check out the two free ones. But some people will be like, no, this is a big part of my process every week. And I would like to, you know, support Neil in that way.
Yeah, no, I have thought about doing something like that. At this point, I'm still like so much in the like growing stage that I'm like, it's exciting for me to see the channel growing. And at this point, at least, I'm just like, well, I'll just keep doing what I'm doing and I'll, you know, make my money doing affiliate deals, that kind of stuff, which I haven't really leaned into yet. But, you know, I've got some affiliate deals lined up, so I'm just kind of monetizing it that way, because I feel like I would probably grow at a slower rate if I did one paywalled is sort of my hesitation there.
It is. It's a push pull there too. But I also think about the type of audience you want to cultivate, right? And the people who are willing to, you know, pay for your content too. Like that's another subset of your audience that you should want to deliver. And then if you think about it this way, like one of the things I love about my paywalled stuff is the quality of conversation and the usefulness of the chat is so much higher. Like the Sunday cram shows, like I'm not getting any like trolling. The people who are all, you know, saying who they're playing and stuff are people who have skin in the game, who are playing the same contest. Like the value across the board is better. And I've been willing to make that sacrifice for those specific shows.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And I also, there's a part of me that has wondered, like, is it good for community building? Like, you know, you have people, there's Chris Williams, the Apple guy from Stochastic, sent me a super thanks and said, well, this, it's the only way that I can send, you know, some money for what you do for us. And he used to always send like 50 subscriptions, like just like send them out to everybody, pay for subscriptions for everybody. And I kind of wonder if there is like a sort of a community building element to having that option as well, the YouTube subscription service for your page. I don't know. I've thought about it a little bit. Maybe I'll do it at some point.
The two things I always think about, Pete just mentioned one, is like the barrier to entry, basically, right, Pete? Like, yeah, having the higher, yeah, quality content. This is what Endgame does too in our Discord. Is it's just a barrier to entry where it's pretty much only sharp dudes in there, you know?
Yep.
And which is much more enjoyable than any, you know, free for all. The other thing is you have to give your guys something. Sometimes they just want to say thanks for and buy you a cup of coffee for, right, doing free content for years. So you have to give them something, especially dudes. Like dudes, a lot of dudes don't want to give you money, right? That's weird. That's it. That's icky kind of. But if you just give me something like merch. So we did a show years ago about RPS's merch. And it's like, you know, the hat was $40 or something. And I'm like defending them because it's like, yeah, but it's not like the people who are buying that are going like hat shopping and they're deciding, right, between the Adidas hat and the RPS hat. And they're like, wow, the Adidas hat's so much cheaper. It's such, they're doing that because they're supporting them. And they want to give it to them, but they don't want to give them cash. So like, oh, I'll buy the hat and then I can wear the hat around. So like members is also with the subscriptions is memberships. It's the same thing. Yeah. It's just another avenue where they can go, oh, here you go. Instead of me like sending you Venmo, which would be weird because we're two dudes, I'll sub to your channel.
That's interesting. Yeah, I hadn't thought about the people feeling icky about sending you money. They're just used to sending it to OnlyFans models. And they're like, why am I sending it to Neil now? Yeah, I get it. It's kind of a weird thing.
I think the young guys are changing. Like I think this is definitely becoming the norm as people like gravitate, you know, leave like corporate gigs for, you know, the gig economy and, yeah, and YouTube and social media and stuff like that. People are getting more used to, oh, that I have to, or I should tip here, you know, or whatever, be a member and do these things because bro doesn't get a salary from, you know, Microsoft or Google or Allstate or some giant company. So like young people are getting more used to it, but I think you still need options for them to thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it was cool. So the guy who won the main BR this week for 50,000, Goat Napped, he shouted out me and the Badge Bros for the Battle Royale content this week. And then he came into both of our live streams, mine on Monday, the Badge Bros on Tuesday, and gifted 50 YouTube memberships.
Cool.
And then I think those are at like $5 a pop. So like a $500, you know, total, just like thank you, give back to the stuff, which was like a super cool gesture, obviously like way above and beyond what he would need to do. But again, like being able to facilitate that through like the YouTube memberships and like the gifting aspect, I thought was like just a really cool thing there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And those guys are like, they could resubscribe too. So it's kind of a cool way to help the channel. You know,
yeah,
those guys might be members later on. Like, oh, I got this free show. I forgot about that. Maybe I'll pay the $5 now.
The only thing that this is like really inside the weeds, but like I have like the tiers, you know, on my channel, and the way the gifting works is it only lets you send it like at the base level tier. So a couple of my shows, then like unless people upgrade, they won't get it. But I've already decided like this weekend, I'm going to make both of my shows from the like lower tier. I'm going to make those just as like GoatNap gave all of these like people things. Let's do it and lower the barrier this week. So like everyone who's a YouTube member can enjoy those shows. But yeah, YouTube, I'm frustrated with some of their like lack of innovation and functionality with stuff, but they do continue to ship stuff. They're changing shorts now, which have now gone to, you can do 3-minute shorts, which is nice. It was capped at a minute. So like there is stuff they're doing. They just created more tools. Like I use their merch thing and it was like a pain to like add the Lulz mug like down below. And they created this like batch tagging tool. So you can just create like anytime I have a Lulz battle video, I just press one button and it puts those things there. So like they do improve in some regard, but I'd like to see more with the YouTube membership and kind of like the ability to communicate with those people.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I have not tried enough with YouTube, so I don't have any major complaints at this point. You're definitely deeper into the trying to make things work on YouTube. But yeah, it seems like, I don't know, I've been able to do mostly what I want to do on YouTube. Still kind of figured it out though.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's cool. It's cool regardless to have people like listen to what you have to say. You know, it's always, it's amazing. I've made this point before, but like you feel like, I don't know, maybe I think there's a lot of people, not just me, but you always are, you know, you're self-conscious, right? In life, right? Like, oh, what do people think of me? But then when you're actually trying to get people to think of you, no one gives a shit. It turns out no one cares. Yeah. You know, there are always some asshole who's like, oh, you look fat. Fuck you, ugly. Right. You know, like there's always people like that. But for the most part, people don't give a shit about you. And it's actually hard to get them to care.
Yeah. And I will say, even to Brian's thing about like surfing YouTube and there'll be someone streaming to like one to two people, like that when you're just starting, I honestly think of it as more of a feature than a bug, just in that like you probably need to get your reps. You probably need a lot of time on camera before you deserve an audience or should even have one. And I trust me there, it's a lot easier to fail in front of a small audience than it is a big one, you know? So I would sometimes relish that. I've compared it to my improv days previously where I would do shows for 10 people, 5 people, but I would have shows where I would bomb and I'm like, I am so glad this was not in front of a big stage. It's like, you want to go cut your teeth and fail. And then when you're ready, like the audience will be there.
I did this totally wrong, by the way, because I went immediately to Stochastic. I had no experience going to other channels. And it's like, yep. So we have 90 some thousand YouTube subscribers on the channel. So immediately before thousands of people and definitely, you know, fail sometimes on those shows. But yeah, it is kind of, I agree with you. Like it would have been helpful to get some reps just talking in front of the camera because it can be a struggle sometimes, especially when you are streaming by yourself to figure out, okay, what do I need to talk about? Like when you don't have those reps, you can't really see it ahead of time. Like, how is this going to go? Once you have some reps, kind of like, okay, I need to be able to fill this space by talking about this, and you kind of have a plan. But yeah, it was definitely different for me coming in immediately to Stochastic with a pretty big audience there.
The words you say too many times, the
you
know, I always notice like sometimes I'm like, I would listen to our show and I'd be like, I didn't listen to Pete at all there. Like I totally answered the wrong question. Like I got to listen better. Yeah. Reps is big. I also think it kind of sorts itself out though, Pete, where it's like the bro who has 3 subs and continues at 3 subs and then stops is probably going to have it like that, you know. Yeah. But some people are just, they're more entertaining, you know, or some people get entertaining, you know. So I think you're right, feature more than a bug. It's, and I respect those guys too, like in some weird way. It's like he's going hard with 2 people watching. You got to respect that. I'm just saying it is kind of, it's, you got to feel somewhere deep inside where it's like, God, why am I doing this for 2 people?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's where the love of the game, you know, stuff comes into play. And I think like so much fantasy football content did stem from that place initially where it's just like, you want to talk about this with someone else. One meta I've seen popping up, just because like I know Nick BDG has had success with this, Flock is doing it this year, where they've created like YouTube channels or subsets of their content that specifically focuses on a league, a single league. So like all the trash talk, all of that. And that stuff does really well because you're like bringing people in, you know, you feel like more emotionally invested in it. And I think similar to like us streaming all 150 drafts, it's like letting people in like they are kind of part of that portfolio, you know, like it's a shared thing. So that kind of concept is cool too. I wanted to ask you though, Neil, like, do you think because obviously the sim tools are far more sophisticated now than even when I was streaming some showdown stuff, do you find that provides like good content fodder and stuff to talk about, or do you think it actually like undercuts things because it's just like, well, whatever the computer says is good is good tonight?
Yeah, it's tough. So I don't do a lot of, I don't use Sims in my showdown content at all. So it's not a part of my process. But I do think like it works when Adam and I, like, I love doing the shows with Adam because I've done, I do, you know, coming prepared the same way I prepare for my own streams, where it's like, I've looked at all the usage patterns. I've looked at the defensive matchups, the correlations, all that, tried to figure out the way that I build and how I think is the optimal way to build. But then I get to throw it off of Adam, and he has run the Sims he uses Saber Sim. So he has run the Sims, run his process, and kind of can tell me like, okay, so I think Bo Nix, you know, you could play him at captain without any pass catchers. Potentially, I think that he's, you know, a good enough runner that could work out. Are you seeing that at all in your Sims? And Adam can tell me like, oh yeah, that did show up as, like, I have several lineups that show up as plus EV with Bo Nix without any pass catchers in the captain, that kind of stuff. So it can be helpful. It's also sort of a crutch sometimes, I think. Like, it definitely, like, back when I was with Stochastic, I would take a look at their Sims, and it was a big part of it was just like, oh, well, I'm seeing this player showing up in the Sims this much of the time, like in my 150 set of the highest expected ROI lineups, he's showing up 20% of the time. And it kind of, in some ways, I feel like it takes away from the conversation if you only look at the Sims. But I think you can still, like, if you just put it into context of like, here's why I think that is happening. I think it's just another tool to add to the bag. I think it probably helps the content in general.
To pump the Davis show a little bit, I do a show with Dan on Davis's channel and Endgame. We simulcast and we talk about how Sims work and the different types of Sims and stuff quite a bit on those. So, like, people are interested. And if you really want to get in the weeds on our Endgame site, we really get into it. But I think it is kind of important for people to, like, know what's going on. So behind the code, and, like, you might have to, like, ask some questions of your service provider, like, what's going on here? So then you can make these adjustments going forward. It's an important concept that I think we talk about a decent amount, but maybe should be talked about more. Is like, what's the context of this SIM provider? And, like, because if you're using, like, the projections from wherever, well, those players are going to pop, you know, it's going to think the Saber SIM guys are good because it's using the Saber SIM guys projections, you know? So, like, what's the context of what's going on here? Like, how are they handling dupes and, you know, the field and all sorts of, are they even using a field? Are they trying something different? Because just like the buzzword of Sims, which Pete and I are probably guilty for having spread, you know, throughout the industry, people just go, oh, well, the Sims say this. It's like, yeah, well, you know, who wrote that Sim? Isn't it, you know, are they really putting in everything? So I think it's pretty sharp to be skeptical of what they're putting out. Maybe skeptical is the wrong word, but just, like, know what the context is. Like, maybe use it more as a sanity check or something like that. Like, okay, so, like, Adam says this guy's coming in 37% in the optimal. Okay, I'm at 50. That's probably about right. That's fine, you know, yeah, or something like that. Or like, I'm at 2%. Maybe I'm screwing up, you know. But if the more you know about what's the process they're using to build all this stuff, the more you can, like, make a decision.
Yeah. And, like, Nolan in the chat here saying pressing Sim and then reading the lineups is hardly content. And I do completely agree with it, but I do think the Sim stuff has opened up, like, very fun conversation topics. Like, a really good example is I was dying when I saw the lineup that Nate Noling finished second in the spy with this week, because it was a Bucks onslaught that included the Bucks defense. And I was laughing because that was a point of conversation on the Guildcast previously, where Davis and I don't know if Sammy too are just like, you can't do this, like, you can't do it. And Nate's like, no, the Sim show, like, in these scenarios where this often, like, these continue to bubble up. And so Nate smashing with the same idea that they had already, like, and Davis was like, that Sim is wrong, there's an input in there that's wrong and all of this. So, like, there are some fun conversations because we all hold these, you know, preconceived notions or these things of like, this is bad, or, you know, a chalk defense or whatever. And so I think the Sims, like, continually showing something that defies conventional wisdom is, like, very fun from a conversational aspect.
Yeah, agreed. It is definitely interesting. To Brian's point about, like, not knowing what the inputs are for the Sims, or, like, not knowing how much to trust the provider. One thing that's been pretty eye-opening to me as I have been working with a lot of different companies, now I have access to different projection sources, a lot of different stuff from different sources. It's way more volatile or like different around the industry than I thought it was going to be. Because I used to, mostly just use stochastic. I would sometimes look at other projection sources, but my assumption was like, they're all going to project about the same. It doesn't really matter for me because I fudge the projections enough anyway to get to the lineups that I want, that I'm like, I don't really care what my base set is. But as I've been writing a cash game article this year, where it's a lot more important to look at the actual projections, who's showing up at the in the optimals. And like from one projection source to another, the optimals vary wildly. Like the projections can vary really wildly. So like in my mind, it's like, well, cash games, you just play the top optimal lineup, it's going to be about the same everywhere. It's like, no, that is not really the case. And if the projections vary that wildly from one source to another, you can imagine the sims are also going to vary pretty wildly in what the outputs are. So you really need to trust your provider. And I think that there are some, obviously some very good sources out there.
Yeah, that's 100% right. And exactly what I said when these first started getting popular, you're basically at this point, you have to trust who you trust. Yep. Do you trust Adam Levitan? Then go use the solver. Do you trust Stochastic? Do you trust Alex Baker? Then go use Stochastic. Do you trust SaberSim? Then go, and just, you just have to trust them, because you can't get into the code, right? And they would never let you for good reason. So you do just have to trust. So like what Dan does is a mix of projection sources. So he'll take ETR, Cardi, whatever, and run the sims. He has the API there too. And so like, and then he'll mix and match. I still think even that is not necessarily perfect. You'll never be perfect, but you know what I mean? But it drives this stuff so much. So I think a real good exercise is thinking about the difference between BR and DFS. Like, because when you're thinking of a sim in BR, you want to go like, Dan did this earlier. Okay, how many RBs does the guys after me have? So is your sim worth shit if it's not taking that into account? But like the counterpoint is are projections driving this so much that it's going to have me take a guy just because the projection's so high, it's not even going to care how many RBs are being drafted after you. So like the context matters a ton there. If you could remove projections at all, like this is kind of some concept we touched on briefly at the end of the show. How much does it tell me context neutral? Right. And so when you move that back to DFS, an example would be like small field simulating. So small field simulating is really hard because it's a lot harder to guess like 100-man field, because you have to be so specific, than a 10, 20,000, 50,000, if you're playing football, huge field. You just kind of have to be more generally correct, because a sim will tell you who's good this week, Justin Jefferson. Like for some reason, only one lineup in this 50-man field has Justin Jefferson. It's like, well, then Jefferson's going to pop. But they're probably wrong, because the real number for Justin Jefferson is sometimes 9 out of the 50, sometimes 1, sometimes 6, sometimes 15, something like that. And so like, what's the context? And then again, same thing with the projections. You throw on the layer, you're using Cardi's projections or something, it's going to go, oh, it loves Chuba Hubbard. Because why? Because Cardi loves Chuba Hubbard. So like, what if we remove that context? Bottom line is knowing what's going on in your sim is important.
Yeah. It's funny. This is, so I had, Jay Fresh on After Dark, and he recently solo shipped the DraftKings, it was the showdown slate. I think it was the Dolphins Titans game. Dolphin Bills, I think.
What do you get? Anyways, like 500K for that?
Yeah, 500K solo ship. And he's been playing Showdown for a long time. He's been very successful. But one of the things he was kind of diving into this point as well, of like how he like understands and thinks about the different sim products, where he was talking about how SaberSim, they're generally trying to get like a market aggregate. They're like trying to get representative of like what the Vegas lines and everything thinks, whereas like ETR is like a ball knowing input. They're putting their fingers on the scale and saying, we think this is going to happen, or our inside sources are pushing us in this direction, and like knowing how to weight those things. And there's pros and cons to each of those, in a way. And I think that's such a fascinating part of that conversation is those inputs and like what you're getting from one of those inputs. And then you can even bring in Cardi, right? Who is way more of like an agnostic model relative to Vegas. Like he has his own things that he weights heavily. And so even like aggregating those, like one thing, tell me what you guys think about this. Cause I've been thinking about it where it's like, I was thinking about this with like best ball ranks too. And I was doing some aggregating, but I was like, man, all of the pieces are kind of like working in harmony in a set of aggregations. Like someone has Adams really low, but Bauer's really high. And those things are working together in a logical way. If one fails, maybe this guy does better. When you aggregate it, like if you aggregate DFS projections right now and one source is playing it as Cooper Kupp in and another is playing it at out, like how is that Colby Parkinson projection useful to me, right? Because they're like working under different assumptions. So that aggregating thing is kind of messing with my head.
I was going to bring that up. So Shady Advice actually was a guest of mine on Playing for Keeps and brought up that he does not think that aggregating is a good idea in general for the exact reason that you're giving. It's just like, you know that it's wrong. If one projection has Cooper Kupp in, the other one has Cooper Kupp out, you're going to get a kind of middling projection where all of the, you know, DeMarcus Robinson or Jordan Whittington, whatever, are going to be bumped somewhat, but they're not going to be bumped to the extent that they should be if Cooper Kupp is out, but they're going to be bumped more than they should be if Cooper Kupp is in. So you're just getting a wrong projection when you, if you're just using one that has them in, one that has them out, you're going to get a median, and that median is going to be wrong either direction, like regardless of what happens with Cooper Kupp. And that's, you know, kind of an extreme example with a player in or out, but there are a lot of, you know, other, you know, just projecting a player for 50% route participation versus 80%, whatever. Like there are a lot of, you know, kind of micro things of that nature as well. So I thought that was an interesting point. Brian, I'm curious to hear your thoughts on that.
I was going to mention Shady too, because he's definitely talked about this the most, I would say. And we just did a video with him, by the way, on Endgame. So it's the distribution too. So I think NBA is the easiest to mentally visualize. Sure. It. Right. So like, let's say LeBron's questionable, like really questionable, not fake LeBron questionable. He's a bad example. Anthony Davis, that's a better example. He's questionable. Well, if you aggregate from two different sources, his 40 point projection might be 0 on one and 40 on the other. And now you have 20. What good is that helping you? And then what the real thing is, you want a distribution, which is, you know, what percentage chance will he play? And then in those games he doesn't play, the teammates get the boost in the simulation and vice versa. When he does play, he gets the full allotment and the teammates, like you'd want it very similar to like play-by-play sim works. You know, you'd want it actually down to that granular level. But it's really the distributions that you're looking for. And when you aggregate, it kind of fucks all that up.
Right.
Yeah.
So you're right, Pete. Your instinct's right.
Yeah. So then Daniel says averaging is the wrong way to use multiple projection sources.
Go on.
Yeah, that how it is. So what is the right way? Nerdy. Subscribe to Endgame Syndicate to find out.
No, well, I think I'm Dan, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think he will sample from the multiple projection sources.
Yeah.
So like if Stochastic has Anthony Davis out, that'd be a zero. And if ETR has him in, and I don't know if he's putting injury sampling as well, but pro, you know, whatever, that would be one way to do it.
Right. Doc says, I think this was discussed sometime last year with another guest, but the concept was weighting the various sources by their historical accuracy, but also like some sources just approach things differently. Like I know Stochastic, if a player is questionable, they're going to leave that player in until they get a doubtful tag or something like that. Whereas like ETR, I think will sometimes just like, this is my read on the situation is this player is going to be out. So they take the approach of they'll assume a player is going to be out even before they have that doubtful tag, I think.
So yeah. Underdog and DraftKings are so like completely different, where it's like with DraftKings, it's like no one's like finalizing their lineups until after inactives anyway. So it's like, it's just more just like for reviewing it. But Underdog, like to me, I would rather have my rankings take a stand, right? Because I can benefit from that. Like you can get Ray Davis. ETR has a really bullish rank on him right now. They're assuming James Cook is out. I even asked Leone and he said they're like 50-50. Like just his hunch, like no inside information, but like they're projecting it one way or the other, because it doesn't do anyone any good if you're drafting right now. Like I want to draft as if I'm right, and so the teams I'm going to draft now are as if James Cook is out, and if I get updated information then I'll change that. And if you don't like that dynamic, then don't draft him or wait to draft until all the information comes in. But it's like the projections to me, like I don't want them to middle it, like you're saying. Like I want them to take a stand, and then I will either ride or die with that.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. BR, it's so tough because in BR, like you just like, let's, I can't remember the player you just said who's 50-50, but let's just say his draft percentage is now at like 15% or something.
Yeah.
Well, if he ends up being healthy on Sunday and playing, he should have been 80 or whatever, you know? And so now you just take him. You just take him because it's just like, there's so many drafts that didn't take him. It's just so useful to wait. BR too, just like one of the interesting differences between DFS and BR is you have information beforehand. Like you have these drafted drafts of ADPs and stuff of people already drafting. You don't have that in DFS. We're all guessing. Even though the guessing is getting good, you know, it's getting much better than it was 2017. Everyone's still all guessing what everyone else is going to do. And BR, we know that Justin Jefferson went first, like a lot of the time.
It's real time ownership.
Real time ownership.
That's why I kind of, my assumption when I asked you, Brian, earlier, whether you're seeing a lot higher EV in BR stuff than DFS was that it would be, just because I feel like there are so many of those types of scenarios. Like that scenario, like even if James Cook could say he's the seventh best running back on the slate and only six need to get drafted, whatever. So he's not like a slam dunk, but like in that case, a sharper drafter will say, well, even though he's not a slam dunk, nobody's been drafting him to this point. So now I'm just going to jam him for that upside. Whereas a lot of other players won't factor in that he hasn't been drafted up until that point. So I kind of imagine that it would be higher EV.
It might be higher than what I estimated because Dan's tool is an EQ equilibrium, tool. Okay. So it assumes your opponents are playing optimally, but they're not, obviously. But also in those, you know, you can never really tell, right? Because we don't know what the projections are and stuff like that. I don't know. Just like intuitively, I think $120 or whatever the number we came with still seems kind of high for me for BR, just because you don't have the control that you have in DFS of.
Have you seen how Pete's doing though? I mean, come on.
What's
Pete
that?
Just wins. Pete just wins every week.
So you consider just running PTV's on underdog running, you don't have to worry about it. Yeah.
PTV's, like $1,000 an hour. Yeah. Least. So I'm talking about us mortals.
Right. That's fair.
Neil, how is it? Has the showdown season, has it been going well for you from a play standpoint?
I'm sure I've lost money. I have had some more sweats this year than I did last year. I felt like I had a chance until pretty late. I've actually had some slates where I win money, which like last year, I don't know that I had a single winning, like it was by far my worst showdown slate last year. And I think that was because I was on live before lock, like just like, I can't focus on my own lineups. I have to, now I've been giving myself a little bit of time after I'm done with my show, I do it an hour and a half and then I try to go about an hour. Sometimes go a little bit long. So I give myself a little bit of time to actually build my own lineups. And I have seen that go a little bit better, but also not that great because I give myself sometimes 5 to 10 minutes to try to build lineups and I'm trying to learn new tools while I'm doing it. So I have not mastered the new tools that I'm using this year with Fantasy Cruncher RIP. So I think I'll get better with my new tools, but it's been, you know, I've had some sweat, so I feel okay about it.
Fantasy Cruncher's back, by the way. Fantasy Cruncher's back.
I have heard. I don't know if I'm going to go back there. I also have free access to a few different optimizers and sims and, you know, whatever. So don't feel the need to go there. It is still the tool that I'm most comfortable with. So maybe I'll do it at some point. But I don't know. There's a lot of good tools out there.
How have you enjoyed, do you now that you're doing stuff for a ton of different sites and doing some of your own stuff, are you enjoying that variety? Do you wish that you had a little bit more time to kind of do your own stuff, or is your workload, or are you happy with how it's shaken out?
I'm pretty happy with the way it's gone, at least for this year. I don't know if I'm going to do the same thing next year. I might, but it's been good from a like getting exposure. So like working with Rotor Grinders, with 4 for 4, with Fantasy Points, like I'm getting exposure to a lot of different types of audience members. So that has been good. It's been kind of nice having that like sort of a base salary, I guess you could say, just because I'm doing enough contract work, but then I'm still trying to grow my own thing. Ultimately, I think that I come from a long line of entrepreneurs. I kind of like being out on my own. I'm enjoying trying to develop my own thing. Has been a lot of fun. So I don't know. I would love to just have my own channel, be able to call my own shots, do only my own stuff. Maybe I'll do that at some point. But for this year, at least, I think it's been good. Kind of the variety has been fun. What's going to be tough for me is when NBA starts next week, because I am very busy and nobody's managing my time except for me. And it's already been a little bit of a struggle, and I'm starting to get comfortable with it now at this point. Now NBA is coming, and I would love it if there was just a NFL ends, NBA starts. But no, we have a lot of overlap here. And I talk to, some places, they say, well, how much Roto-Rent asked me, how much interest do you have in being involved in our NBA product? And I'm like, well, I'd love to jump in after NFL starts and like really do a lot of work. And I was kind of told, we kind of set the schedule ahead of time. So basically what you start from the beginning is going to be your schedule. And I'm like, ah, shit. So I kind of have to play that balance of I want to have some money coming in after NFL ends. But at the same time, I can't really add that much to my plate. So it's been kind of a funny balance trying to figure out how to get NBA going while I'm still really busy with NFL.
That's funny because I understand that perspective of we want you to commit to things, but you are probably representative of a lot of DFS players who are going to shift attention to NBA once the NFL winds down or once the regular season's over and all the full slate. So it's it's like a restaurant, right? When the Friday night slam, rush there, you get the extra servers on hand. It's can I be the guy who comes in once everyone starts caring about DFS? We had a little extra content for all the NFL bros who come over.
Exactly,
I think that's your sales pitch to them.
You're right. I should have gone that route.
But that really is, a large percentage of the DFS community right now is going should I do NBA this year? Right.
They're doing late swap again. I just saw in a Discord that they're going back to.
Really? I just assumed they were. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Did they change every 2 weeks on whether it's going to be late swap or not?
I think they only did a couple of those, tested it with no late swap on Fridays last year. Apparently didn't go well with the base. Brian, are you excited? I have not read anything about the new Onyx tier program for DraftKings. Have you looked at it at all?
That reminds me, they just sent me an email saying I have to pick my gift.
Okay, so you're gonna get a gift. That's cool.
It is between a leather jacket and sandals.
Okay. that's your Onyx tier gift.
Man, I don't even know where to pick it. I'm trying to look so I can send people
truffle hunting in Italy to a pair of Birkenstocks. Is that what happened, Brian?
Yeah.
Exciting new changes.
Yeah, things have definitely changed. I can't find the link. They gave the NBA free pass again, the NBA league pass thing free. I couldn't figure out how to hook that up to my YouTube last year, so I'll try once again. It wasn't my fault. I know I took a screenshot of my TV today, but believe me, I
Brick, do you want the guy who swings by Silva's house to Tech Lord? Do you want him to just kind of swing by?
I should have never taken that fucking picture. No, the funny thing is when I was in high school, I knew more about computers than everyone, including the teachers. You know what I mean? Back then, people couldn't even type. And now I'm the old man taking fucking screenshots of my TV. the shoes apparently are $1,000 or something. So a Jeff Hamilton NFL jacket or Surgeon footwear. Are you guys familiar with either of these? I know Shady said he doesn't even want the footwear because it's not tax deductible. So, if they give you $500 sandals, you have to pay $500 and $250 in your taxes.
Wow.
So he's like, I don't want $500 sandals. And it's like, yeah, I guess he's probably right.
Okay. Nerdy is clarifying in chat. No, this is just an additional gift, not instead of the main one.
No, I know. Yes. We were kind of kidding there. There will be, I'm assuming there'll be an Onyx gift next year.
A dirt bike.
I think I saw an allusion to
they
that.
Switched the bonus thing again, so you could pick now 40% bonus for the month or 5 days, five specific days where it's got the 5X. I did the 40%. I don't know what's better. I don't want to remember because I would forget and stuff.
Yeah,
me too. So at least they brought that back. They don't have the The chest, they brought the chest back where you could, click and get random amounts of of credits. But only to select people. I didn't get it.
Oh.
But I guess Yuta gets like nothing. Like they don't give him shit, he says. So you have to be somewhere in between of like registering all the time and like not registering, I think, for to be in their wheelhouse.
Yep.
I wish it was like, better. What am I going to say?
Because what? The typical way rewards programs work is the highest volume users get the biggest rewards, right? They're getting the invites to go sit in the suite. And you're now saying like that, like if you're on the like the really the tippity top, like Yuta, like they don't even care because they're just like, you're going to spend that money regardless. And we don't even have to wine and dine you.
It has to be their logic, right? I don't know. What do you think their logic is?
They want money coming in. They don't want money going out. And with Yuta, with Brick, the money's going out.
Yeah, but it's not. Not lately. It's they're still paying their rake, right? Like, I mean, I get conceptually you're a winning player, but like they are taking their rake no matter what. And he's helping them fill contests. So I don't know if that logic tracks for me.
Yeah. Fair.
You want to make him happy. Yeah. No doubt, I would say, but who knows? Who knows what they're thinking?
Man. Yeah. What kind of content has Yuta been doing over at
He just did a process, his NFL process.
Ooh, really?
Yeah.
That's fun.
Yeah. And he was at, Pete helped us out trying to find an editor. This was one apparently it took him hours to edit his own video and he doesn't want to do that anymore. So
Yuta edit his own video. That is something that I want to get into myself is editing. Pete, you don't edit your own videos. You hire somebody.
Oh, no. I happily pay people now. It's expensive. But yeah, no, I will say like knowing, I think it's really important to know how to do those things before you outsource. Like everything I now outsource, I used to do on my own, right? Like thumbnails all on my own. One, because it gives you like a baseline level of like, how much does this cost? Like, do I enjoy doing it? What are the skills? And then that helps you to appropriately price it. Like, what is my time worth versus, you know, paying someone? And then also saying, not only does it take time off my plate, but it's going to be done much better than if I did it. So I do think it's helpful to like know roughly how much it takes you and, you know, to do it on your own, but I do not miss video editing.
Here, you want to share this really quick?
Yeah.
This is what he's got. His NFL week 5 build and swap. So
nice in the swap. That's cool.
His next one I think is, probably NBA or maybe we might be doing a projections video. This is Yuta's videos. He's got the Snowball MLB video too.
Is he using Fantasy Cruncher there?
He is. He went back when they went live. I think now he's like
in the meantime.
I think he's using both. We got a bunch of nerdy videos, nerdy tenor videos. Oh, these roundtables where we discuss all sorts of different gambling topics. And then we had a couple discussions with the bros here. Those are like the newest ones. And we, you know, obviously we have the stuff we started with too, you know, like how to create ownership and projections and stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, because that's been I'm really excited to check out the process one. Cause I was like, even when we had him on, Brian, way back before you went into business with him, it was still like hard to kind of understand, like he's making his own projections. The Sims are in his head. Like what's really going on here? So it sounds like he's going to pull back some of that curtain.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's a good mix too, because Dan and me, I feel like have way more similar a way to attack things, than the No Ball Bros. So it's nice to have like the No Ball Bro pretty much making the other videos.
Imwald wondering if you guys got any discounts running or anything right now for in game.
I think there's discount for the draft caddy dudes. I think that should still be active.
Yes. And I, as cause I've been, you know, doing my videos, I get questions constantly about the ownership percentages. Obviously people who watch LOLs are aware of that, but the draft caddy, I mean, I thought, I really thought it was a valuable tool during best ball and all of that stuff, but having the ownership percentage there is probably the biggest feature add that the draft caddy has ever had.
Especially if you're like for you, Pete, like somebody who's paying attention and is no balling. And you're, you know, no balling isn't just like, I know, like, I think Jordan Love is good this week. It's, oh my God, that is too low ownership.
Yeah.
Right. So like today we had a disagreement, Josh Jacobs. So like this, the solver said Josh Jacobs should be like 50% and we have him at 18 and Davis won't even draft him.
Well, that's what it's kind of like, you know, on DraftKings, there's this element of like stuff. You feel the constraint either way, right? Either the good plays with ownership or the contrarian plays with price. And like you run into these dead ends with underdog. Like you don't run into these dead ends because it would be the equivalent of having like a $70,000 salary cap on DraftKings and then getting to play. And it's like, okay, everyone's playing these good plays, but then there's some other really good plays that are not getting played. And that just plays out in underdog, like on a weekly basis, where you can essentially have your cake and eat it too. You can have really strong plays that you feel like are in legitimately good spots. Oh, and by the way, they come at really low ownership. And that makes it fun. Like, you know, some of the sick plays you have to make on DraftKings where you're like, let me just plug my nose and pray it gets home. Like, you don't really have to get there with underdog plays.
Very true. He also put up for Endgame that and he's going to do it again this week, the optimal combo for the field. So like, what should how many double stacks should the field be playing? How many?
Oh, I'm excited for that.
Yeah, which will go perfect with our edition, which should be here hopefully later today. But I think the coder might be sick. Which is the predicted combo projected for the field this week. Right for BR. So not just we think Dallas Goedert 68% own. It's like Goddard and Hurts should be projected to be. We don't know for certain, obviously, this percentage. So you compare that to, you know, what you have, what you think the field should be, and all these numbers, and it makes it pretty damn easy even for me to like make some good teams.
For sure. And like some of that you can do intuitively, but to having the full grid out there would be really cool. Like I was looking at, you know, Darnold is projecting well, getting drafted around 20% according to the draft caddy. And I was like, I bet 19.8% of those are Justin Jefferson teams. You know, the team who takes Justin Jefferson 101 or 102 is stacking. And then I'm like, the amount of Sam Darnold teams without Justin Jefferson is probably like microscopic in the BR right now.
We just talked about that. What percentage do you think the EQ solver would say Josh Allen is solo, not stacked? Like what do you think optimally consider, like assuming everyone's playing perfect, how many times should Josh Allen be solo drafted?
Well, Amari Cooper's not in the player pool, right? So you mean this week specifically?
Not able to be drafted as a Bill.
Yeah.
And this counts Kincaid. So it counts tight ends.
Yeah. It's funny, Brian, because I'm thinking about the dynamics of like juxtapose him to Jane Daniels, who's like a top pick this week. Last week it was like Lamar. And I feel like if Josh Allen had that ADP, like you basically need them to get like the rushing, right? That's how they truly pay that off. They don't necessarily need to bring a pass catcher along with them, even though that can help. The cheaper he gets, the more I feel like you have a little bit more to play with. So your question is optimal percentage that he's naked
when he's drafted.
And this is in BR or
in BR.
I consider there says 50%. I feel like Josh Allen, he's unique in that he both has the rushing, obviously, but then he does spread the ball around so much that I think he like it's a definitely a higher number for him than just about any other quarterback, I would think. And are you talking just this week or
just this week
in general? So just with Amari Cooper in there too, if Amari Cooper plays, then it would be a pretty high number, I would think, for Josh Allen.
Yeah, not Amari Cooper. No Amari Cooper.
Yeah.
Maybe I go 60% Josh Allen should be drafted naked.
It was 75.
Damn. Okay.
75. Yeah.
Pretty nice.
And who was the other one he did? Was it Purdy?
Oh. Purdy, I'd
say I can't remember who it was, but it was like very, very low.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Now I remember. Adrian O'Connell.
Oh, wow. Oh. Well, that was going to be low.
Really low, because
not drafted. Not drafted, but when drafted.
When is he optimal? When he's drafted.
Theoretically, what's the
he doesn't really run like 5%.
No, so 5% he's solo, you're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, because I asked it the other way around, but
sorry.
Yeah, it's 100%. So if you take him, it should be with a catcher.
Yeah.
Right. That makes sense. Right. That's just as like a proxy for any of the kind of like pocket passer guys. Like they're just not getting home.
The analogy, and this is Dan's, it's not mine, but it's perfect, is just like in baseball stacking and DFS, where if you have a shitty player, he's going to be in a stack like almost every time.
Yeah.
And so it's the same thing with like a bad QB. It's like the only reason you're ever taking him is for the stack with your stud.
And it's funny, like Jordan Love last week is kind of an interesting use case to this conversation, because he had the one pass catcher he threw two touchdowns to, Romeo Doubs, was barely getting drafted. So like naked Jordan Love would have worked in that context. Whereas if those two touchdowns went to Jayden Reed or whoever, then like, or Tucker Kraft, then you absolutely would have probably needed that pairing together. But if it's a guy who catches them all, that's not getting drafted, then you can get away with it a bit more.
Yeah. Yep. Right. Yep. Yeah. I really like this aspect, because like there was kind of the whole idea was to rip off Poker Tracker. And if for the people who don't play online poker, back in the day, there was software Taylor Cabey made where, or he eventually purchased the company, but I'm sure he used it, was it displayed like your opponent's tendencies, like their VPIP, their voluntary put in a pod and three bet percentage and stuff like that. So you could kind of game plan accordingly against your opponents. And so it's very similar to, in my head anyways, BRs is like, oh, okay. So if everyone's doing this, what should I do? And you still got to use your brain and guess, but you know, you're adjusting for the tendencies of your opponents.
So Neo, you got a showdown stream tonight. What time have those been kicking off?
Yeah, so I already recorded just before we got on here. I recorded one with Adam. I go right when inactives come out, or like within 5 minutes. So inactives come out 90 minutes before the game. I usually go a few minutes after that. I'm always late. So probably 5 minutes after inactives come out, I'll go live for hour and 10 minutes or so.
There you go. And I guess I didn't realize, and you know, I apologize, I haven't gotten a chance to tune in for any of these showdown, but I'm surprised like that you weren't doing any sim stuff, that it's the hand builder's paradise for showdown, it sounds like.
Yeah, I mean, I've always been more of a no ball guy. Like I never really leaned into the sims that much with showdown. It was always kind of like, okay, I think the field, this player is being projected for this much ownership. And to me, that's wrong. And it's always been a little bit more based on my own intuition. I'm not going to pretend to be Utica with the sims in my head, but I do a lot of intuition stuff with showdown. And yeah, it's kind of the same thing. I'm largely leaning into, you know, I feel like this player, looking at the usage trends, I could see him getting even more usage this week than he had last week. And the field is only playing about 5%. So I really like that player. So yeah, it really is just I don't consider myself, I've called myself, I think, a moderate ball knower in the past. I'm not an elite ball knower, but I know some ball. But then with showdown, what I love about it is, if I spend enough time on it, I can become an elite ball knower for that one slate. For one day, I can look at the usage trends, the defensive matchups, that kind of stuff. So I feel like by the time I'm doing content on it, I'm pretty prepared.
It is perfect for that, honestly, Neil. Like you don't have to be Udiv, because I watch almost all your shows, like the direct, like, because I'm doing my lineups, right? And so I pop Neil on, and the thing I'm basically always looking for. Chat you and ask, but it's always like the guy who's gonna get one or two catches or something. Like that's so important in showdown for not duping. Like if there's a guy who just got promoted from the practice squad or something like that, I want to make sure he's in my pool.
Yep.
You know, so yeah, you could definitely no ball that much. Like if Neil's paying attention to the whatever it's called, you know, the Twitter roster news.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
I feel so bad when I do miss something. There was a slate a few weeks ago, there was a running back situation where it was like this running back was on the roster. I assume he's going to be the starting runner, and totally missed it. There had been a tweet where it was like somebody who was a beat writer was like, I think that this player, he wasn't active last week, but I think he's actually going to jump up the depth chart. And it actually ended up going okay for me. It was like two names that I didn't know going in, but yeah. I feel so bad. Like I put in the work to try to make sure that I catch all of that stuff and say it on stream for people like Brian who need the to know the guy who's going to get one catch.
I'm not going to know it, Neil. Yeah. So someone has to.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny. Like that stuff literally is meaningless on Sunday. Meaningless, you know.
Yeah,
it's not gonna matter for the Millie Maker winner, but on Showdown it's like very, very important.
Not Ty Johnson Arena. It was somebody with a weird name. It was like a strange first name that I never heard before. Like Pumpkin, it sounded like that guy.
Oh, you're talking about the Steelers running back.
Yes. And it was Pumpkin and some other guy who hadn't been active the week prior. And I was like, no, I think this Pumpkin guy is still going to be the leader. But a beat reporter came up and like, I actually think this other. And I totally missed that tweet. And then I saw in Discord after, I was like, oh shit, I hope
did this he get any?
Not relevant.
You could always
it ended up being irrelevant.
You could they justify it. Yeah.
Yeah.
When the guys who might get one or two touches in Showdown don't get any touches, you're like, yeah, that's right. I didn't have to redo my whole process. Yeah.
I did feel good about, I did not react as strongly as many to the news that Frank Gore Jr. was getting the backup catches. Like some people brought that up and I felt good that I did not overreact to that and stuck with my Ray Davis guns.
But, well, you can tune in for the Showdown stream with Neil and then pop over with us on the Shipcast tonight. We're going to actually, right when this is done, start building our pick-ems and just like looking at the projections for this game tonight. I've been doing some of the primetime paloozas too, and it is by far the grossest slate you will see, because the primetime then takes this game and then pairs it with Jets and no Devontae Adams and then Steelers with still no quarterback, you know, official decision yet. So just a real fun time all around. Brian, sounds like you guys got tons of stuff going on the in-game syndicate. I just made notes to check out a couple of those videos. Anything else out there?
Just the draft caddy. We're adding the combo percentages shortly. If you're on Endgame, you can get nerdy stuff too. He's still, if you watch that show, by the way, which is on the Endgame YouTube channel. If anyone wants to go sub, we do content over there. What else? And I'm doing Davis Takecast, Patreon Takecast after this. So a lot of streaming for the Bricksinator today.
Wow.
The Bricksinator. Love that.
Man starts playing Madden and calls himself the Bricksinator. Right,
yeah, exactly.
Pair of Birkenstocks.
It fits, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. These Manning guys, I think they all think I'm because you could hear the chat, right? Like it comes through. They all think I'm a homosexual, apparently.
they hear your voice and they think you sound
like I don't have a headset, you know, so you through my TV. Yeah.
Why is that? Yeah. What's your use? Is it based on your username or what?
No, it's my username. It's the same one.
Huh.
Except it's got extra numbers. I can't figure out how to take it. Like the numbers at the back end. It's like 752142 or something. But
oh, yeah.
Incredible.
Yeah. So, and that's all we got going, I think.
All right. Well, appreciate you guys hanging out in the chat. Go follow Neil. I got the link in the description to the Flannelverse YouTube channel so you guys don't miss his stuff over there. And you can follow him on Twitter for all of those other content updates. And I'll be back tomorrow with a bunch of my DFS stuff, the Deposit Kingdom video with Battle Royale strategy, week 7 show with Jam to Win, and of course, off and on the clock with the Badge Bros. Otherwise, enjoy your Thursdays, enjoy the Sean Payton revenge game, and we'll see you guys next time on Lulz. All right, 1 sec, I forgot.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.